This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 12. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or are just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Mike?
Not much. Still in Albuquerque. It's a good time.
And still sick. You sound just the same.
It could be worse. It could be worse.
I guess you're not sick. You have allergies, huh? There's a difference.
Mild difference. Certainly doesn't feel like that sometimes. No, that's about it. Just enjoying my iPad.
Again with the iPad. Someone save me. Someone just offered to give me an iPad and then I won't have to hear about it from Mike anymore. You can reach me at 626-3... No, I'm just kidding.
What about you?
Well, my wife and I have been married 10 years as of a couple weeks ago. So we spent the weekend in San Francisco. We caught a show and had a nice dinner. It was a lot of fun. Nothing new to report on the work front, though.
Making good progress on the book?
Yes. The book will be released soon. And by the time this podcast is published, it should have been out for weeks. So come check it out at startupbook.net.
Okay, cool. So what are we talking about this week?
This week's show is titled Six Ways to Increase Your Productivity. There's something very specific that we're addressing here. We're not talking about how to find more time in your day. What is it that we're going to address today?
Well, I think that we're going to be looking at specifically because of the fact that as most micropreneurs get started and they're trying to build their business, they're still working a full-time job. So you're still spending anywhere from 50 to 60 hours a week, including your commute and everything else. You're still spending that time. You only have maybe 2 hours a night to work on your own products. And so total maybe 10 or 15 hours a week. And you want to get the most out of those 10 or 15 hours as you possibly can. So you want to be as productive as possible during that time. And that's what we're really talking about today. Is we're trying to look at specific ways that you can increase your productivity while you are working on your products. The first one that we came up with is that people need to stop multitasking. And everyone seems to think that they're great at multitasking. I'm a wonderful multitasker. The fact is that most people aren't. Computers are designed to do multitasking. I mean, all the modern operating systems are multitasking operating systems. And they do it reasonably well, but there's a certain point at which it becomes inefficient to switch between tasks. And the threshold for computers is much, much higher than it is for people. And for some reason, most people have this illusion that they are very good at multitasking when the reality is that they're not. So our suggestion for this is to basically, when you start one task, finish that task and then move on to the next. Don't try switching back and forth between a couple of different things unless you're actually waiting for something. I mean, if you kick off a query into some system and it takes 3 or 4 minutes to come back, sure, you know what? Go ahead and spend that 3 or 4 minutes doing something else and then come back to it. But for the most part, that's really just not going to happen. I mean, that's not the case for most of the things that you're doing.
Yeah, I think a big cause of this is listening to podcasts while you work. Now, of course, ours is the only podcast that really matters, right? I'm just kidding.
This is more about trying to listen to podcasts while you work because a podcast, generally, you're listening to it because you want to pay attention to it. And if you're paying attention to it, you're half listening to it and you're half doing whatever it is that you're trying to do. And so you're doing both of them pretty piss poor.
Nice. I think you summarized that well. I'm actually I do this all the time. Probably once a day I listen to a podcast while I work. But you know what I realized a long time ago is that whenever I listen to it, my productivity will go down. And so I do it for a very controlled amount of time, typically like a 30-minute podcast. And I kick it on when I kind of need to have a break. And I kick it on when I do very specific things, like when I'm moving a lot of files around, because that's kind of no-brainer work. I never do it when I'm typing an email or trying to read something long. I only do it when I'm doing kind of more visual work. Maybe some, I can actually listen to it while I'm programming pretty well. I know that I'm acting like the exception here, but coding uses, you know, a different part of kind of my concentration. But most office tasks I can't do while I'm listening to podcasts. And so it really does slow me down overall. And so I've kept it pretty controlled. And I do find that once the podcast is over, I feel kind of rejuvenated, kind of like it did give my mind a temporary rest. But yeah, I know people who listen to like 5 or 6 hours a day of like talk radio, or they watch CNN or stream CNN while they're working. And I think that's got to cause some concentration issues.
And those concentration issues are really what kind of drops people's productivity. So if you can concentrate on the task at hand, that's certainly going to help your productivity.
The second approach we came up with is removing distractions. Now, I've been a culprit of this for years, or I used to be, I should say. Having your email toaster pop up whenever you get an email, or even having an IM client, you know, pinging you when someone wants to chat with you, they're major, major issues. They totally break your trains of thought. And we all feel like we're the exception. We feel like we're the person that doesn't impact. But I actually stopped the whole email notification thing a couple years ago. I read the 4-Hour Workweek, and one of the key points I took away from that whole book was Tim Ferriss saying, only check your email twice a day. And I admit I don't do it twice a day. I probably check my email 4 times a day, but it absolutely has increased my productivity. When I sit down to do email, I do it in a batch now. I have 10 or 15 emails to respond to. It all makes it easier to figure out what I'm working on at any given time, since I like to track every minute of my day and assign it to, you know, one of my products or one of my clients when I used to do consulting work. It really helps to kind of batch them and do related things all together, rather than every 5 or 6 minutes, you get this pop-up, you know, throws you into a tailspin, and you open up your email client, you read it, and you think about how to respond. And the worst thing is, if you can respond really quickly, you do that and you might get back to what you're doing and, you know, get back into a flow. But the worst thing is when you see it and it's like, oh no, this is like a 10 or 15 minute response. I don't want to stop right now. And then you just leave it read in your inbox and go back to what you're doing. And then it's kind of mentally weighing on your mind. And you have these red emails stacking up in your inbox. And you come back to them later and you have 10 or 15 of them. And it's just overwhelming. But if you had finished your task and batched those emails, you would have been focusing on that one task and not trying to, you know, essentially it's a form of multitasking, right? It's trying to do two things at once.
Yeah, email is definitely a big distraction. But I mean, when you've got that 2 or 3 hour block that you're working on your product for an evening, I mean, there's a lot of other distractions. I mean, IM clients, your phone, your cell phone, wife, kids, everything's a possible distraction. And the best way to get rid of them is to, you know, turn off your email client, turn off your phone or your cell phone, put them on mute or vibrate or whatever, or just turn them off outright if you can. If you're working at home, ask your family to just kind of leave you alone and let you get the things done that you need to get done, because that is your time that you've allocated to working on your own product. And if you aren't able to work on it effectively, essentially you're pushing out your launch date. Every interruption that comes in, you're pushing out your launch date. And as soon as you come up on something that is going to start eating into your productive time, just keep that in the back of your mind. By paying attention to this or whatever it happens to be, you're pushing out your launch date. The third way we came up with to increase your productivity is to create a discrete task for everything. And what I mean by this is, when you have your product launch that you're trying to get to and you know the things that you need to do to get to that product launch, you have this huge list of things that you have to get done. And what you need to do is you need to organize that list. You either use a bug tracking system or Notepad, whatever system works for you, use that. And for every individual thing that needs to get done, create it as a task within that system and use that system. What's going to happen is you're going to end up with an extremely long list of things that need to get done. Your goal here should be ignore the actual length of that list. The length of that list should not be a discouragement. That list of things to do is essentially a list of things that you need to tick off in order to get done. And the entire purpose of this list is to allow you to track everything that needs to get done and make sure that things don't slip through the cracks. And while you're working in those 2 to 3 hour blocks, you pick off some of those things and you work on those things and you move on to the next one.
Yeah, I think the real benefit here is you might have noticed something about the way we develop software. First, you sit down and you design some type of high-level spec, even if you're doing agile development or something. You get a general idea of what you're going to build, and then you might do a little bit of design or a little bit of architecture. And then after that's done and complete and makes sense, then you step into the coding. And those are like two or three different tiers in the process. And have you ever noticed that if you're sitting there coding and suddenly you need to switch into design mode, you need to go back and kind of rethink those decisions, it's really hard to shift your mind from those extreme details and shift it up to 30,000 feet. It's almost like you are on the ground digging a ditch, basically writing code, and you try to jump up to 30,000 feet and look at the whole picture. It's really hard to do that mental shift quickly, and it kind of churns up a lot of time. You have to get the whole context of the application back, loaded back in your internal memory. And I think that's the same thing here, is that if you look at a task and it's going to require a number of things to do, it's so much more efficient to put all those tasks out at one time. You're in the mindset, you're in the flow, you do it once, and then as you're working through them, once you're done with a task, there's no reason to procrastinate, to get distracted, to do anything. You don't have to sit there and load the context of the whole project back in your mind. You just look down the list and the next thing's there and it's like, oh, I need to now write this one email or you know, get this logo designed or whatever. And since it's such a discrete task and it's so easy, you can just implement it immediately, you're much less likely to be less productive, basically, to wander off and read your RSS reader or do whatever it is that you do when you get distracted.
Yeah, I mean, the primary thing here is to get yourself organized. So as Rob said, I mean, you're not switching gears between looking at the dirty details and then you realize that you forgot something. You have to shift gears, go back up to that 30,000 foot view and essentially figure things out again and get the lay of the land. And because you're wasting time every time you do that. But if you focus on getting all those tasks written down, figuring out what needs to be done, and you've got that list, you can essentially block those things off so you're aggregating some of those ditch-digging tasks all at one time, and you can just bang through them. And then when you're done, you switch out to five or six 30,000-foot view tasks.
Approach number four for increasing productivity is to focus on those discrete tasks. So once you've created all of the tasks, focus on them. When you finish one, start working on the next one.
One of the things that I found to be helpful is to use a timer to essentially challenge yourself to get things done in a certain time period. So if you've got one of those kitchen egg timers, those sorts of things sometimes work, but occasionally the ticking bothers you a little bit. There's software tools that can kind of do the same sort of thing. Essentially, you decide on a task that you're going to do, and that you're going to be able to get done within, say that you're 2 hours into your 3 hour time period, you've got a 45 minute task or a 60 minute task that you want to get done. You set the timer, you say, I've got 60 minutes to finish this, and you go to work on it. And every once in a while, you can glance up at that timer, see how well you're doing. And essentially, you're challenging yourself to try and finish that task in that allotted time period. And what you can do is you sort of make a game out of it. And you say, well, I think that this task is going to take me 45 minutes. Can I do it in 35? Can I do it in 40? Those sorts of things will challenge you to work harder because you're going to not procrastinate while you're working. And that's one of those things that a lot of people will do. They're going back and forth between screens. They're going a little bit slow. But if you focus on your productivity, this is going to make you more productive. One of the downsides to this is that if you're in the middle of a mentally challenging task, and programming is a great example of that, if you're in the middle of one of those tasks, and let's say that you gave yourself 30 minutes to do something, and the timer goes off and kind of jumps up in front of you, it can be a little bit jarring. It can be disruptive. And you kind of have to decide for yourself whether or not that is so disruptive that it's actually impacting your productivity or not. And if it is, you leave it in the background, you leave that timer in the background, and you check when you're done. Maybe you went over, maybe you didn't. As long as you can make sure that you're on track to try and meet the goals that you're setting, the important piece here is that you're being as productive as possible.
Another approach I've seen used, I don't actually use it myself, but my wife does, and I've seen this used to great effect if you're fairly organized, is to actually plan out the bulk of the next week. Like on Monday, to actually open up your calendar, look at the full week, and do a form of time boxing where you actually time box out 30-minute blocks and you say, I'm going to work on this specific task, or maybe 15-minute blocks. Now, that puts a lot of administrative stuff up front. I think that, you know, to be most effective, you're probably going to want to stay between 30 and 60 minutes. But what it allows you to do is that when you sit down that night to get started and you look at your calendar on Wednesday, it'll say, get the HTML built or build this single feature, and you don't have to think about it. One of the biggest reasons that we procrastinate is that we don't know what to do next. Have you ever noticed once you're in the middle of a task, or once you know exactly what you need to do, it's not actually that hard to get the task done, but you can kill a lot of time trying to churn and figure out what the next task is. And that's what that approach is trying to avoid.
The fifth way to increase your productivity is to make fast decisions. Humans are notoriously bad at making decisions when there's any sort of a risk analysis involved. And there's been various studies out there that show that based on certain parameters of humans trying to assess and quantify or identify anything where there's a variable nature to it, we're just bad at it. Vegas makes a killing off of people being bad at math and analysis of the statistics involved in various things. So the problem here is that the vast majority of the things that you do or the decisions that you are making, let's be honest, you're not going to make the worst possible decision in any given case. What you need to do is you just need to make a decision and move forward with it. And if you need to change your mind or change what you've done down the road, that's fine. Because in the long run, what's going to happen is that the time that you've saved in making those decisions quickly is going to more than outstrip the time that you would have spent sitting around and thinking, am I making the optimal decision here? You never have to make the best decision. You merely have to make a reasonably good decision. So make your decisions quickly and simply move on. I think an example I used in the past was if you're trying to buy a hard drive and you're trying to decide between like these two different models, one gives you 9 millisecond access time, the other one's like 8.8, and there's $20 difference between them. You spend half an hour trying to figure out which one should I buy. It's like, well, you've already wasted enough time to just have bought the more expensive one. So does it really matter at this point?
And our sixth and final approach to increasing productivity is to outsource. Mike, I know you and I have harped on this before. We've talked about outsourcing. Some people are believers, some people aren't. But of all the approaches we've listed here today, this has been the single most important one for me personally over the past about 3 to 4 years, was learning to outsource at first simple tasks to a virtual assistant, and then going a bit larger and having designers do more work that I used to try to do myself, including HTML and CSS, and even working with some outsourced developers from time to time to write some code that I, in the old days, would have written all myself. But it's incredible the amount of time you can save. The other ones are incremental ways to increase productivity, but this one can be just a much larger amount of time saved. These days, I use virtual assistants and other outsourcing partners for, it's actually pretty slim these days. It's probably down to about 40, between 40 and 60 hours a month. But about a year ago, I owned a few different products that I've since sold. I was well into the 150 to 200 hour a month mark with VAs. So it gives you an example. I mean, those are hours that I would have been working. I would have either not been able to maintain the products at the level they were maintained, or I would have, in theory, I can do the work a little faster than they were. So I wouldn't have had to spend the full amount of time. But realistically, you know, even if you say I'm twice as fast, it still would have been another 70 to 80 hours that I was working each month. And that's a pretty big productivity boost.
I don't think people fully realize the value that having a virtual assistant or having just somebody who you've hired to do something for you really has in terms of your productivity, because the fact is that if you've only got these 10 or 15 hours a week to work on your product, if you outsource a task that takes 4 hours, that right there is 25% of your time for the week. And it's very effective to be outsourcing tasks that really don't require your skill level to do, because you can't outsource certain things like the development. You could outsource development if you want to, but we don't generally recommend that people outsource their core skills. In the last podcast, Charlie had written in and said he's not a developer. So, of course, he's going to outsource that task because he's not a developer. But a lot of our audience is developers. So why should you be outsourcing your core specialty? But there's a lot of things that you can outsource that you don't need to do. I mean, you don't need to be doing copywriting. You don't need to be doing editing of, you know, web pages or other people's copywriting. That's not stuff that you need to be doing. I mean, you can outsource that, have somebody else do it, and move on. And that saves you so much time in the long run. And if you can save 4 hours a week, well, basically you just cut another week off of the time that it takes you to get to launch, because that 4 hours a week over the course of a month is 16 hours, which, as I said, if you're only putting in 10 to 15 hours a week, there's your extra week closer to launch.
This week's listener question is from Justin Chimura, and his question is as follows. Dear Mike and Rob, I've just started listening to the podcast and figured I would pose a question. I currently work at a small software company doing about 30 hours a week because I'm currently wrapping up college. I also have a lot of ideas for doing development on my own and possibly taking those ideas to the next level. What I'm running into is showing the same dedication to my projects at home compared to my projects at work. Do you have any advice on how to push through development on your own time when already doing it for 7 or 8 hours straight that day and keeping up with the background behind marketing a product? Thanks, guys, and keep up the good work. What do you think about that, Mike?
Well, I think that he starts off really well. He says, "Dear Mike and Rob," so that makes the score Mike 3, Rob 0. Is that correct?
Hey, wait a minute. Yeah, I'm going to reorder this.
I think that there's a few different underlying elements here. And the first one is that there are a lot of different reasons why people aren't as motivated to do their own projects as they are at work. Sometimes you come home and you're just exhausted. You don't feel like doing more work. Other times, you know, you're comfortable at your job. You're happy with it. Why are you really working on this other product? I mean, does it really make sense to spend that extra time? If it's not something that you're doing for a good reason, I mean, you really have to have a good reason to be building your own product. And if it's just because eventually you want to have more money, that's fine. But I think that in Justin's case, he's just coming out of college. And what's his rationale for building these extra products? Is it because he wants extra money? I don't want to say it's a bad reason, but or some of the other reasons that people aren't necessarily motivated are that they've got other things that they want to do with their lives. I mean, I remember back when I was just finishing up college, the last thing I wanted to do was on a Friday or Saturday night be sitting at home banging away at code. I mean, I wanted to be out hanging out with my friends and doing all sorts of things that were not programming. All those things kind of add up. And you really have to sit down and think about, well, why am I doing this? In terms of things that you can do to actually push through and develop things on your own, there's a couple of different things that you can do. The first and foremost that works for most people is public accountability. And public accountability is just telling people what you're doing, why you're doing it, and giving yourself deadlines to meet. And if you're not able to do that, I mean, if you can't hold yourself accountable to meeting those deadlines, then you're never going to finish. I mean, essentially what that does is that puts you in that first category of people who are, you know, they start products, but they're not necessarily good at finishing them. And that's, on one hand, that's good to know that that's the type of person you are. But on the other, you need to be able to figure out how to deal with that. And other things that you can do for public accountability, you can have a blog post where you tell everybody, say, this is what I'm doing, this is my deadline, and then you essentially write in reports for that. Inside of the Micropreneur Academy that Rob and I run, we tell people, I mean, there's an accountability forum in there that tells people, hey, why don't you tell people what you're doing and give us weekly updates. And that helps so many people get on track and make sure that they're doing the things that they've committed to publicly doing. Some other things that you can do, hang around with others who are doing the same sorts of things as you are. I find that's a little bit more challenging than some of the other things to try, just because of the fact is that when you're first coming out of college, you usually have more friends who are probably interested in that sort of thing. After a couple of years, it gets a little bit more difficult to find people who kind of have the same mindset as you and say, yeah, I'd like to build my own products. I'd like to become an entrepreneur. The ratio of entrepreneurs to everybody else in the world is actually pretty small. I mean, there's a lot fewer entrepreneurs than there are people who are willing to work for, you know, these multi-million dollar companies who have a national presence, for example. What about you, Rob? What do you think some of the other things that he might want to try?
Well, to add on to your point about hanging around with others, I think that's a big reason that so many people go online, and that's something I recommend. You live near Boston, which is a startup hub, and so you could actually find a lot of meetup groups. I used to live there, and there were a bunch of great developer and techie and entrepreneur meetup groups and startup meetup groups. But out here, I'm in the Central Valley of California. There isn't anything. There are zero meetup groups for, you know, developer entrepreneur types. So that is, you know, one of the reasons that I recommend going online and finding that community on blogs like yours and mine, or on, you know, Dharmesh Shah, 37 Signals. I mean, these are all kind of good startup-oriented blogs. And then, of course, you can go to places like answers.onstartups.com. In addition to that, I have a couple in mind, some things to try to maintain your motivation, because I think that's what Justin's trying to do, is how do I stay motivated to push through after a long day's work? And one thing we're going to come back to over and over when we said we would is having written goals. You brought it up a little earlier, but knowing your goals and being able to reference back to them. And if your goal is, I'm doing this to make money, I'm doing this for personal happiness, whatever it is, define these things and put them down on paper. 20 minutes to write down why you want to build products, what you want to get done, and when you want to get it done by makes it more real for you. It makes it more tangible. It's easy to let days of not writing code go by if you don't come back to. So I'm not going to harp on it too long. We did talk about it a couple of times in podcasts past, but I really think this is the cornerstone of keeping you focused and aware of why you're doing these things.
Something I'll add to that is, even if you don't believe us when we say that, spend the 20 minutes. And what's the worst that you're going to lose? You're going to lose 20 minutes. And the best thing that could happen is that it works out in your favor.
And I think the other thing I would suggest, something that I've had success with, and I've actually spoken with some other developers about how they stay motivated, and people use things like music and caffeine or even a glass of wine to kind of get them into, you know, a certain state of mind. And I think music and caffeine are going to be better because they make you more alert and they can help you focus. Typically, I will drink a glass of wine while writing a rough draft of something non-coding oriented. Find what it is that sets your mind into that flow. It may depend on your mood. Sometimes it's, you know, an instrumental like Enya, something you would never tell your buddies that you listen to, but it send you into this soundscape mode that just kind of shuts your mind down and makes it super ultra focused. And it works especially good at night with that kind of music because it's the soundscape feel. Other times, I have a number of Metallica albums that I have on tap for just cranking it up and hearing really loud music that gets me amped and gets me through some tough stretches. And obviously, there's all different types for you, but find out, you know, maybe what your two or three different genres of music are that can really pull you into it. And in general, I think for me personally, it's actually finding the same group of songs. It may be like one song. Sometimes I'll put a single song on for and loop it for a couple hours, which sounds irritating to some people, but what it does is, it sounds weird, but it's like a trance where I'm in such a deep flow state that the time just goes by really quickly and I'm ultra productive. That's the wine, exactly. No, I've heard of other people doing this exact same thing of finding their song or a couple of songs and just going through them. And of course, caffeine can help this as well. I mean, it can be abused, but if you're smart with it and you realize how your body reacts to it, I actually drink one thing of caffeine at lunch and I block off certain things to do right after lunch that I know I'm going to need high energy for. And I don't do those things before lunch because I know I'm going to be at probably my lowest energy point of the day right before lunch.
Very cool. So, Justin, I hope we answered your question, and thanks for sending that in. And we just wanted to recap a little bit for the six ways to increase your productivity. Number one is to stop multitasking. Computers are great at it. You're probably not. Number two is removing distractions from the environment. Close your email, turn off your phone, turn off your instant messengers. Make sure that you're focusing on what it is that you need to do. Number three is create discrete tasks for everything, making sure that you've got a long list of everything that needs to get done so that you can pick and choose things that are related to one another and you're not zooming in and out of the project itself.
Number four is to focus on discrete tasks, get them done one at a time, and move on to the next one. Number five is to make fast decisions. We're bad at making decisions when there's a risk analysis involved. You know, don't waste a lot of time, make the decision and move on. And number six is to outsource.
If you have a question or comment, please call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it in MP3 or text format to questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Feel free to include your name and URL if you'd like. A transcript of this podcast is available on our website at startupsfortherestofus.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider writing a review in iTunes by searching for Startups for the Rest of Us. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or via RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com. We'll see you next time.